Blog Talk Radio.
I can see clearly now, the rain is gone. I can see all obstacles in my way. Gone are the dark clouds that had me blind. It's gonna be a bright sunshiny day. Gonna be bright, sunshiny day. I think I can make it now. The pain is gone. All of the bad feelings have disappeared. Here is that rainbow I've been praying for. Gonna be bright.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any comments you would like to make during the show, please feel free to email me at bonkay@aol.com. That's bonkaye@aol.com. Before I introduce my special guest for tonight, I just want to remind people that we're only less than 2 months away from our healing weekend at the end of April. And it's a wonderful experience for those of you who need to touch base with other women who are going through your situation. Many times we feel so isolated because of the fact that people don't understand what our situation is, and it's hard to talk to people about it because people are judgmental. And when you get together with a room full of straight wives who can understand every feeling you're having, you don't even have to say a word and they know what you're feeling. It's a very empowering feeling. We have a wonderful weekend planned right outside of Washington, D.C. The only cost for the weekend will be $75 to cover food charges. And the rest is a gift to you from me every year because it's so important for women to connect. We're going to have one day of sharing. The next day we're going to have some therapeutic interventions by therapists who are coming. And it's always just an amazing event where women come back to just reinforce their recovery or to share with others or pay forward. And with some new women who are just in the midst of going through all of this. So if you would like to join me, there's still a few spots left. Please send me an email at bonkay@aol.com, or you can go to my website at gayhusbands.com and just click into information about the healing weekend. Without further ado, I'm going to be introducing my guest, who I will say a few words about her before I introduce her, Kristen Calblee. And I first became acquainted with Kristen in this last year when I read an article that she wrote. And I will say this, it's really hard for me to find heroes within our cause of straight wives to look up to. But Kristen is definitely my literary hero, because I've never found anybody who can write as beautifully and with feeling as she has to express all of the feelings that all of us have all of the time. And Kristen, I want to thank you very much for coming back to the show, because I know your words inspire people all the time. But when I first, you know, read what you wrote, I want to discuss that a little bit. It was an article called "Frankly, My Dear, I'm the Victim of Homophobia Too," for women who haven't heard our show before, because we're always having new listeners. And it was an article where you talked, well, I'll let you talk about it. Go ahead, Kristen.
Yeah. Hi, Bonnie. Know, thanks for having me. And that incredibly generous introduction. It was a rebuttal article that I had written in response to an initial article that appeared in the Huffington Post, written by Rick Clemens, who is the host of the podcast, The Coming Out Lounge. And my understanding of him at the time was that he had been a closeted husband and had been married to a straight wife and had transitioned out of the closet, and then has a career shepherding other men out of the closet as well. And he had written an article in the Huffington Post, something to the effect of, it's been quite a while now, a couple of years, but the title was something like, "Frankly, My Dear, This Is Why Gay Husbands Marry Straight Wives," or something like that. And at the time, I'll confess to having newly, at the time, it had been very recent since I'd learned that my ex-husband at the time was gay. Even though I'd already been divorced from him for about seven or eight years at that point. But I was so, I think that incensed would probably be an appropriate word, by what I found to be sort of a dismissive tone in the original article, that I had to respond to it. And my response was essentially that in a society where closets exist, and there are all kinds of closets, whenever any individual is put into a closet that is not of their own making, that is not their own design, that is not by their own choice, and may not even know that they're in someone else's closet, that we have essentially been conscripted into someone else's, a play that someone else has written, and it's not our life anymore. It's not a life that we are designing and directing, fully conscious of what we are choosing. And so I really just objected to the notion that we could be, as a straight woman, we could be used in that manner. And not everyone feels, I just want to, you know, be really clear, not everyone feels particularly that way about their marriage. But in my case, I definitely did feel that I was part of my ex-husband's, I was part of his props and scenery for the stage that he had set for his life. And so that's a very, very painful and vulnerable experience to have. And I realized through a lot of, early on, it was a lot of anger that I wasn't okay with that. So I had to respond. So that's what prompted that initial article. And it can still be read. It's still floating out there. I think it was originally
still floating right on my computer. So if anybody wants a copy of it, all they have to do is write to me, and I will send it right over to them. I'd like to mention just a couple points you made in that article that I thought was amazing, you know, which is why, you know, I can say I was so impressed by what you had to say. If you don't mind me reading just some of it.
No, go right ahead.
And in the article, Clemens asserted, if you haven't lived and breathed sexual orientation confusion, felt gay shame, or laid awake at night wishing that you really could pray the gay away, then honestly, you have nothing to contribute to this discussion. As the ex-wife of a gay man who was in denial during our marriage but came out after divorcing his second wife, I know that I do have something to contribute to the discussion, and I have earned my place in the conversation. It is another travesty that homophobia still exists in our culture to such a degree that self-loathing and fear still infect perfectly wonderful people who happen to be LGBT. Recently, the Archbishop of Philadelphia said gay couples should be abstinent. Preachers still promote disproven and insulting reparative therapy and advise gay men to marry straight women, as if our lives are suitable sacrifices on the altar of their religious homophobia. This is baldly discriminatory and deeply harmful for LGBT people. But when my ex-husband chose to marry me knowing he was gay, he compounded that harm, spreading the trauma and devastation to two lives rather than confining it to one. I am the victim of homophobia too. Many LGBT people may not want to acknowledge this, thinking it detracts from their very real suffering. I certainly understand they do not want to share in that particular medal of the oppression Olympics. I'm not invalidating the brutal homophobia that sent people like my ex-husband so deeply into his closet that he had to use me as a door. I'm saying that my life was ripped apart by that homophobia too. And I am in pain and angry, very, very angry. My justifiable anger should not be confused with homophobia. I am not, nor have I ever been homophobic. I've officiated LGBT weddings and count LGBT people among my closest colleagues and friends. This shared trauma should make us allies against the injustice of homophobia and its consequences, but often criticism of behavior like my ex-husband's deceiving a straight spouse into marriage is spun as anti-gay rhetoric, and that is dishonest, dismissive, and divisive. I'm sorry, I just get chills every time I read your writing. But can we talk a little bit about that also? Because I think people very much confuse our feelings of going through these marriages as being homophobic, which has nothing to do with it. Is that correct?
Yes. At least in my case, I can say that I grew up in the theater. I came of age in the theater. So all my dates to my high school dances were gay boys. I was very tall, and not a lot of the straight boys wanted to go to dances with me. So they picked my prettier friends. And so I went to school dances with gay boys. I was in the theater. And so my best male friend in high school was gay. So I lived a life that was a teenage bohemian and artist. And I actually met my ex-husband in the theater. He was a musician and I was a performer. And so I didn't start out as a homophobic person. I didn't start out as a young teenager from the time I first became aware of what homosexuality was. I mean, I think in the beginning I was like, what is this? I don't understand this, of course. And there were some reactionary attitudes early on when I was maybe 13 or 14. But quickly, as I became involved in the arts, that all went away. And so I sometimes wonder if my ex-husband, I wasn't a good choice for him in some way, because I was very accepting of the LGBTQ community. And I didn't say homophobic things. In fact, it was my ex-husband who said very homophobic things on occasion. He had, a gay roommate whom he slurred on occasion, and other instances where the things that came out of his mouth were deeply homophobic. And so it is not necessarily the case that when somebody marries a straight spouse and they're a closeted LGBTQ person, that the person who is oppressing them is necessarily that straight spouse. The oppression, the closet, has a whole lot more to do oftentimes with the culture that we live in, the family of origin that LGBTQ spouse may have grown up in. So when it happens that we do find out that our spouses are gay, and that they've been in a closet for the duration of our marriages, and we have been a part of that, either consciously or unconsciously, intentionally or unintentionally, And we can react with anger, as I did in that article 2 years ago. I'm in a very different place now. I can hear the tone of that article now, and I'm like, wow, you know, I've really made a lot of progress, which is really good. Not that I begrudge anybody their anger, because that's a very important phase to move through, and it's necessary for many of us. I don't begrudge anybody that anger. But when that anger starts to come out and when we can start to express that anger, sometimes it gets interpreted on the outside as homophobia. And sometimes it gets interpreted on the outside as we're blaming our ex-husbands for being gay. And that's really, really complicated, because while for me personally, I had a moment during the middle of my marriage where I was like, please just let him be gay. Oh my God, if he were gay, that would answer everything. It would answer all my questions. It would take the confusion away. And it would make sense. So please just let him be gay, and then we could be friends, and we could just divorce amicably and go on our merry way. And I had these sort of fantasies that our relationship could just change form instead of being the tortured relationship that it was. And so it wasn't for a long time. There was like a real feeling of even, I'll help him come out of the closet if he just tells me the truth. Or I'll be a support for him as he comes out of the closet if he just tells me the truth. So when none of that happened, and then when I realized that he actually would have kept me in that prison of a marriage for far longer, then I began to feel like, okay, that's not okay. I deserve to be set free. I deserved to be able to have a life where I was free to find love or not, as it suited me, and be in the kind of relationship and a marriage that I consented to, because I'd never consented to be in a mixed orientation marriage. And so when that trauma and when that anger first bubbles up, and that resentment and yet bitterness, and you know, I hate it when it's not always a good thing when people say, oh, you're just bitter. And it's kind of like, I want to say, hey, guess what? It's like, bitterness is a part of this package for a little while. No, we don't want to stay there, but damn straight, you know, like it's okay to be a little bit, it's okay to be filled with rage. It's okay to be bitter. It's okay to be angry for a little while. We don't want to get stuck there. But those things do not necessarily mean that we are homophobic, and it does not necessarily mean.
I think to the contrary, that most women who get married to gay men were very liberal as far as they're thinking about gay people. Homophobia and being upset that your husband's gay have no relationship to each other.
Right.
It's absolutely not even in the same field, right?
Yeah, and I, you know, I hear some women say, you know, well, damn straight, I'm upset that my husband is gay because I married a straight man and I loved him thinking he was straight, and that makes sense. That is not the same as homophobia, and so we can't conflate the two, and we have to be really, really clear about that we are allowed our anger, and we are allowed our rage, and we are allowed our hurt, and we have to give ourselves full permission to feel that full range of emotions and feelings so that we can move through to whatever is next, grief or understanding or forgiveness or compassion, if that's part of your particular journey. Whatever is past the anger, rage, bitterness, resentment stage, confusion stage, we have to be able to fully go through all of these stages. And it doesn't help us when people in our orbit and outside say, oh, well, you know, can't you just understand him? I'm sure the closet is really hard. You know, something that Rick Clemens said as you were reading the quote from his article, or rereading my article where I quoted him, and he talked about, unless you felt gay shame and you've lied awake at night trying to pray the gay away. And I want to be clear, I have as much sympathy for that experience as I can possibly have without having lived it myself, because I've been in a closet. I was in my husband's closet. So even though I was not hiding my own sexuality in that marriage, I certainly lived the effects of a closet. I lived the confusion. I lived the disorientation. I lived the something's not right here. Something feels off. I don't know what it is. I don't know what to do. I don't know how to fix it. How do I make this better? Because I spent most of my marriage trying to figure out, you know, okay, well, what if we have your testosterone checked? Or what if I just wear sexier lingerie? Or what if I, you know, what if I groom my genitals? What if I suggest this kind of porn? Or, you know, I was trying to fix everything. And so, and none of it, of course, was going to work because none of it was aimed at the actual issue that lay between us because the actual issue that lay between us was not on the table. So when that, so I understand that laying awake at night going, I can't figure out how to make this thing the way I want it to be. And I do claim a space in his closet. I do claim that I've been in a closet, not my closet, but I've been in a closet. So I do have empathy for what Rick Clemens describes in that art, in his original article, talking about laying at night, laying awake at night, and praying away the gay because, and the gay shame, because I lived with a man who so clearly was in a tremendous amount of gay shame and self-loathing and pain and projected that outward onto me. I mean, there was just, there's no doubt about that.
Well,
I
think that's the whole point. I mean, all of us sympathize with their struggle. And that was, that's really not the issue when it comes to us. And the issue when it comes to us is that in within their struggle, that we are the victims of their frustration, victims of their anger. And what they take from us is what's been taken from them. They feel they cannot lead open lives as gay men, but they're going to make sure that we're defeminized, if there's such a word of using that, so that we're not leading a normal life either. And that's the issue that I keep, you know, bringing up. It has nothing to do with homophobia. It has to do with a gay man living a lie with you and making you feel that there's something wrong with you because he can't accept who he is. And that, to me, is the problem.
Well, and truly, it's the word I use is, I mean, it can reach levels of unconscionable cruelty. We can be talking about levels of sexuality shaming, of verbal abuse, of sexual abuse, of bodily shaming of women, defeminizing us. I mean, all of those things. I've certainly experienced where it took me a long time. And I still grapple with it. You know, what is my authentic expression of my own femininity? It has been a 10-year journey for me to come to that place where I feel like I am authentically as feminine as what my own definition of femininity is, and how to express that to myself and in the world. And that's been a long grappling. And because my sense of myself as a woman was severely mangled in that marriage, and there is just there's a tremendous amount of heartbreaking abuse that happens, from genital shaming and body shaming to sexual rejection to you know, even something like, oftentimes I felt the dynamic in my marriage was like roommates or brother sister, which can happen in a straight marriage too. Let me be really clear. You can be living with your partner. You can be married for, you know, 15 years and look at your straight partner one day and go, oh my God, I feel like we're just roommates. You know, that happens in a straight marriage. The difference is that there's not a massive secret that's being held about fundamentally who one person in the marriage is that's not on the table. And when you go to address that roommate feeling or that platonic feeling in a straight marriage, you at least have a shot at being able to rectify the situation if you both come to each other and say, all right, what's going on here? But when you're in a mixed orientation marriage and someone's in the closet and you go, I feel like we're just roommates, or I feel like we're brother and sister, or I feel like we're just platonic people living together, and the other person is closeted and either in denial or aware that they're gay but not coming clean with it, you have no hope of rectifying that situation. There is nothing that is going to happen, and you're going to be left in that stew of confusion and upset and trying to fix a problem that you can't you know, you can't even begin to fathom. And to me, that I think that that was the most damaging part of my marriage, was not the fact that my husband was gay. It was the fact that his closet meant that I stewed for 12 years in a place of deep confusion, deep frustration, not being able to, feeling like something was wrong, trying to address it with him, being rebuffed, trying to put it on the table, knowing that there was some underlying truth I couldn't get at. But whenever I tried to put whatever that was on the table or get to the bottom of it, it just got, and that included towards the end of the last end of our marriage, that included actually confronting him about being gay. Or asking him if he, it wasn't even really a confrontation. It was, are you gay? It was just the question, are you gay? And continuing to meet with that brick wall of denial, and that brick wall of gaslighting, actually, as well. So that's, to me,
well, I think there's another issue here also, Kristen. I think the other issue is, like you were saying, that, okay, couples who are straight after 15, 20 years can also have a platonic relationship. That's true.
Yeah.
But in most of those cases, there was intimacy involved in the beginning years of that marriage. It wasn't a slow breakdown of the woman making her feel that, you know, there's something wrong with her if she wants to make love with her husband, being told rejection after rejection that, you know, what's wrong with you? Why are you only thinking about sex? Or a husband who's berating his wife, well, if only you would be more, I've heard every single excuse in the world why women tell me what their husbands tell them. If only you were more adventurous, if only you were thinner, if only you were heavier, if only you had bigger bust, even if you have smaller bust. And women who have gone through so much therapy, you know, to try to find out what's wrong with them, where this is what upsets me, you know, that there's no feeling that a woman spending years in therapy finding out what's wrong with her, that her husband doesn't want her, when in fact it has nothing to do with that. And the fact that they can't be honest, it just really rips away at the inner soul of women who find themselves left in very, very bad situations when the men are willing to either leave and not tell them, or they just leave, you know, and do tell them. Either way, they've been so stripped down over, you know, years of deterioration. Now, I know you spend a long time in a marriage, a decade is forever, but look at women who are living like this for 20, 30, 40 years.
Sure.
Not living with the truth by husbands.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, how do you...
Where's
the fairness here? Where is there any fairness here?
There isn't. There just isn't. And so we have to... I can only speak from... First, let me say that what we're talking about here is psychological abuse, pure and simple. It is cruel. That level of gaslighting, that kind of deflection, where a husband essentially belittles or shames or sexually shames their wife, and then she goes off and tries to jump through these different hoops to make herself more appealing or desirable to her husband, when that was never the issue, and it has no hope of working, only to return to him, okay, I fixed the thing, but I've got the lingerie, or I took a shower, or whatever it is, only to be told something else. Or the defeminization, where all of a sudden you're wearing clothes that are not really who you are, but your husband kind of, like, my, for example, you know, one story I tell about the defeminization is that I'd asked my husband for a really sexy robe, and he got me this really, really big fluffy robe that was just so terrible, and it made me feel like a box. It was like a down comforter that had been sewn into a robe, and it felt, I felt defeminized in it, you know, and it was kind of a really graphic example in my own life of how I'd wanted to be seen by him as really sexy, and he continually, not just in this one instance, but continually over the course of our 12-year marriage, continued to make it so that I was not sexy, and or to him. And I want to be really, really clear that this is dehumanizing on a profoundly intimate level, because we don't get more vulnerable with another person than our sexuality. Our sexuality is sort of the nexus of our humanity and our vulnerability, and the way it kind of holds in it all of our hopes and dreams for our love relationships with our significant others. And when we are shamed in that area and rejected in that area and then told a reason for that rejection that is a lie, that's a real form of psychosexual abuse. And I want to be clear, I'm not a psychiatrist or a psychologist, but in my own experience, I would unequivocally stand by that statement. And so we have to understand that that kind of abuse takes a long time to bounce back from. And there is no fairness in it. There is no justice in it. It is not right, and it is not okay. And if our husbands were healthier people, I would like to think that they would be able to recognize. I'm blanking on the name of this woman right now, and I really am sorry that I'm blanking. She was a lesbian woman who was out in the 40s or 50s. She died very recently, and she had been engaged to marry a man in college, and she was a famous lesbian woman. Her court case actually went to the Supreme Court. I'm blanking on her name. I apologize. At some point, I'll find it. And her marriage case went to the Supreme Court not very long ago, and then she recently passed away. Edith Windsor. Thank you, Edith Windsor. And at one point, she said to the man she was engaged to be married to, and this was in like the 30s or 40s, she said, you know, hey, I'm not what you need, and you are a great guy, and you deserve better, and you deserve to go find love. And she let that man go. She let him go. She said, you're a great guy, and you deserve to find love. And I would like to think that if our husbands were in a healthier place, they would say, and if there was an ability to have empathy for their wives and an ability to want what was best for their wives, they would say, wow, you know, it's not right for me to keep my wife in this marriage where she cannot get the love from me that she deserves. She cannot get the intimacy, physical or emotional, that she deserves or wants or maybe thought she was signing up for when she got married. I owe it to this woman to let her go. I owe it to this woman to let her out of the marriage, to tell her the truth so that she can heal and move on, and so that she has a shot at finding love with another man who is attracted to her, who loves her romantically and not just platonically, and can be in a relationship with her. If our husbands were in a healthier place, maybe they would be able to do that. And maybe some gay husbands, when they come out, if they come out younger or are in less of a closet or have less self-loathing and more self-acceptance, are able to do that. I was unfortunately not married to one of those. I was married to somebody who he was going to stay in his closet and he was going to keep me with him. And that's not okay. And when we've got somebody who is in a 20, 30, 40-year marriage, when it is your whole life and it is all you've known, and then all of a sudden this material new information comes in to inform you about a life you've lived for 40 years or 30 years, it's basically telling you that that life was based on a lie, or that life was not what you thought it was, or that the narrative you constructed for your life is not at all the narrative you've been living. And your sense of reality gets ripped out from under you like a rug out from under your feet. There is no fairness or justice in it. So what are we left with after that? This really, really unjust thing has just happened to us. And we have to, in my own experience, it has been a 10-year journey, I would say, to be able to to be able to put back together the pieces of my life and to reconstruct a narrative that of my life and what happened that made it have sense, make sense for me, made it something that I could live with, something that I could process, something that I could try and understand so that I could continue to live my life and not stay there for forever. And that's really, I think it's one of the hardest things that we have to do. Anyone suffering from any kind of trauma, especially the trauma of gaslighting, where the reality you thought you were living is not the reality that you actually were living, where the narrative of your life is not at all the life you were living, and we have to all of a sudden take this new material information and reconstruct a new narrative of our lives out of that, is a really, really intense and difficult project. And I want to both inspire people that it both can be done, no matter at what point of life this information comes that you're married to a closeted gay man, no matter how we find out that information, which is devastating in all different kinds of forms when we find it out, and that it's also really, really hard. So let's give ourselves lots of breaks. Let's give ourselves lots of permission to be sad, to be angry, to scream at the sky and say, no, this is not fair. This is not just. This is not right. And then to continue to build, to continue to grieve and continue to take steps forward to build our lives after that. Because if we wait for justice, and Bonnie, I know you are working on a campaign, and that is fabulous because we need all arms of this. But for many of us, there will be no justice. There will be no comeuppance, or there will be no day in court. And so we have to figure out a way to give that to ourselves, with whatever that is going to be for us. We have to figure out a way. For me, it's through writing and through talking to people and helping other women in the situation experience it in a way that has a lot of compassion and acceptance for where they're at in this particular journey. For someone else, it might look like going on a long hike, or for somebody else, it might look like starting a new career. Or I think we have to acknowledge that there are some situations in our lives where we aren't going to get justice, and we have to then make a choice. Okay.
Well, I agree that I don't think it's going to be justice for a long time, but I think part of that is also because we're the voice of silence. And this is a problem within the straight wife community. I know people don't want to hear it over and over, but I'm going to keep saying it. That as long as we remain a silent majority in this particular case, as long as most of us are afraid to speak out and say, I call our campaign the We Too, not the Me Too. The We Too have also gone through this struggle, and people aren't listening to what we've gone through, and that people like you, at least you write about it, people can read about it. And nobody writes it better than you do, but you're one person writing. So that's why my new newsletter that I'm writing about, one of the things I'm mentioning is that every time somebody throws us a straight white bone, that's what I call it, like an article gets printed in the Huffington Post once or twice a year, or somebody comes up with a blog, and everybody's so excited in our community. I mean, look at the gay community. The only reason they've been able to be recognized, and deservingly so, don't get me wrong, but I admire the fact how they stood up and they said, we are not going to be treated like second-class citizens, that we are going to fight for our rights, that we're going to fight for equality, that we're not going to allow people to put us down, to shame us, you know, to make us feel bad about who we are. And they stand united, they stand tall, they fight legally, they fight on the streets, they march, they protest. And that's where they've gotten where they are today. But with straight lives, the more that gay community comes out, the more silent we become. Because for us, it seems to be our shame rather than, you know, being able to speak about it. Can you address that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm very well aware of the closet we're in. It's and I'm still coming out of that closet myself, in terms of who I interact with and who knows my story and who I choose to tell my story and share my story with. That circle gets bigger and bigger all the time. But it also, every time I stretch myself, like, okay, I'm going to post this thing on social media, or sometimes I have to cringe and shut my eyes and hit send or post or whatever and be prepared for some backlash or something like that, because this is hard stuff. We are in a closet, and we have been shamed. There is no doubt that there is shame associated with this. We don't want the questions of why didn't you know? Did you really not know? I knew. I thought. I suspected. oh, honey, you know, I saw that coming a mile away. Like, things that are not helpful, we get that stuff all the time.
Uh-huh. Absolutely.
And sometimes we choose, and I understand why we do it. We choose, like, I just don't want to deal with that today, so I'm going to keep my story quiet. I'm going to, and many of us are in communities, if we're in particularly religious communities, et cetera, where there might be social consequences or economic consequences for sharing our stories. This is what I say to women, is that as you continue to feel bolder and as you continue to own that this is not your shame, that this is not your failure as a human being, that this happened to you, that you can begin to talk about it little by little, more by more. And each time we share these stories, Oprah was just on 60 Minutes tonight, and I missed what the show was, but all I heard was the preview of her saying, every time you tell the story again and again, you get a little stronger with each retelling. So as we continue to get bolder and we continue to have a little more courage, we can have permission and grant ourselves permission to try a little bit to share our stories. And we may get backlash and we may have to crawl in a little hole for a little while and nurse that wound and go, okay, it's going to be a little while before I'm ready to share my story again because that one hurt. And then we go out and we share it again and we say, no, I'm not going to be allowed. I'm not going to allow someone else to silence me. I'm not going to allow someone else to tell me, no, I can't share my story. Because the thing is that these stories are really, really, really painful and really, really human. And we only have half the picture of the gay closet when we only focus on the closeted gay husband coming out. We don't have a full picture of the damage that closets do to us in our lives. We don't have a full picture of what damage living inauthentically means and how that absolutely wreaks havoc in people's lives when we have somebody living in a closet and conscripting other people to be part of that closet that they construct for themselves. It, again, intentionally, unintentionally, consciously, unconsciously, however that closet gets constructed. You know, I believe that my husband knew he was gay before he married me, but I also believe that there are other women whose husbands maybe didn't know or weren't conscious of it, maybe never intended to hurt their wives, but I think the spectrum of husbands run the gamut. You know, you can have the extreme narcissist who does intend to deceive somebody. And then on the other end, you can have someone who is incredibly innocent and does not intend to deceive, genuinely wasn't familiar with their sexuality. So we have to, within that huge broad spectrum of experiences, we have to understand that there are a bunch of stories in there that need to be told. And these stories are our power. And as we tell them, I want to say to women, you know, as we tell our stories, we claim a little bit of our power back. See, part of the justice, part of the idea that there isn't going to be justice, maybe in a legal sense or in a karmic sense, if you will, in our relationships with our spouses, is that we can go ahead and create that for ourselves. And one of the ways that we can do that is if we feel so called is to share our stories if we can. And every time we share the story, it takes a little bit of the sting, a little bit of the pain out of it. And, you know, a lot of women ask, well, my husband's not out of the closet. It's not, you know, maybe not right for me to share his story. No, you're not sharing his story. You're sharing your story. What is your story? What is
Well, that's
your
one of the
experience?
Things that I'm writing about this month for our newsletter is that it's not our secret to have to keep. I'm not saying you have to go and announce it in the New York Times or on blog on the you know, computer, but you know, they go out to live their gay life, but they want us to keep their secret. And they say, don't tell anybody this, but they're living a gay, now all of a sudden they found themselves in living a gay life. And so they don't want their families to know, and we don't want to hurt our families. This one. So now the secret is ours. It's not even theirs anymore. They're out there leading their gay life, and we have to keep a secret. And I don't even understand the whole concept of that. I mean, I understand it, but it's just a matter that we have to say, no, it's not our secret to keep. We didn't create this situation. You created it. I'm not going to make people think that I'm responsible for the breakup of our marriage because I wasn't a good enough wife for you, you know, because a lot of times men will go and tell that to people. Well, it didn't work out. It was mutual. It's not mutual. We went over and aboard, you know, and did everything above board and did way beyond what any other wives do. I would say straight wives make the best wives because they keep trying harder for something that can never work and they don't give up. But, you know, then why does the blame have to be our blame? I mean, I don't believe it's our secret to keep. I feel if you want to tell your family, your friends, it's not your secret. Don't be ashamed of something that was done to you. What, you know, I think the more we keep a secret, Kristen, the more we stay in that closet and the more embarrassed we feel. Do you think so?
Well, you know, I think the thing, I do, I think that there's an important distinction that is really, really key. And that is, like, sometimes when we're really, really, when we're really close to the divorce or we're really close to the marriage falling apart and we witness the essentially the trash, like the fight for who's got the narrative that everybody's going to believe. And the husband says one thing and the wife says the other, right? Like, I went through the whole campaign of slash and burn of my own particular reputation among family and friends and watched my reputation be thoroughly drugged through the mud. And I made the decision at the time. I said, you know, I'm not going to fight this because the people who I know and love, who love me, who see my behavior will make the decision for themselves. Like, I trusted the caliber of people in my life that they would see how he was behaving and how I was behaving, and they would actually make the distinction not on what I was saying about him or he was saying about me, but how I behaved. And that if they, to keep my friends, they would stay with me. And if they left, then they weren't my friends to begin with, and I couldn't take them into this new life I wanted to build anyway. So I was going to let them go. And I kind of allowed this natural burning away, if you will, of various associations and relationships. And the ones that truly mattered actually stayed with me without me ever lobbing that first dirty word about my ex-husband. So that is one thing I want to say about the fight in the moment while the divorce is happening and while things are heated and there's a desperate feeling of not, you know, somebody is doing image management and they're trashing you to manage their image. That's one phase, and we've all got to figure out how we're going to handle that phase. We've all got to figure out if we're going to get in there and throw it back and hurl accusations, et cetera, and or if we're going to handle it a different way. And we all have to make a decision about what's the right way for us to handle it. There's another thing that I'm talking about, and that is about outing the husband. I would never say that it's okay to out somebody else, but it's intention. It's what's the intention behind a woman telling her story about her closeted gay husband? Is it to out him? Is it to smear? Is it to be nasty? Is it to be vengeful, et cetera? I would say, you know, think twice about that. If that's what the intention is, think twice. I would say if the intention is, I need support, I need help, I need someone to see me, I need someone to hear me, I need to be seen, I need to be understood in this, that is a very different intention for sharing your story. That is, that story may be, I think my husband might be gay, but he's not coming clean. I don't know what to think. I can't make sense of this. I can't make heads or tails of this. In the moment when you're close to the marriage, that's a very different intention than going around town and telling everybody, well, my husband's gay. He won't come out, but I know he's gay. That's a different experience. And so the first thing I would say is, what is your intention? And then as your intention gets clearer, and we have a place of strength to stand on that's like, okay, well, I'm not trying to go about trashing my ex-husband or my husband. I'm not trying to make his life difficult. My intentions are really clear. I'm trying to get support for myself. I'm trying to help other women understand that this is not their fault. I'm trying to create a sense of community and compassion around this really, really traumatic experience. I'm trying to share my story so that a legislator might know that this is not an okay thing to happen and we need some laws to change maybe. I'm trying to share my story so that we can understand the damage that closets do so that we can hopefully have a society where closets are no longer necessary. So intention matters. And I think when our intention is to get support, to help heal, to reach out, to be seen, to be heard, to understand, or to be understood, we're good. We're good. When the intentions are in that other place, then we want to really, really think hard about it. So, you know, it's a really, really tough situation. We're at sort of a cultural crossroads moment where LGBTQ people are claiming more legitimacy and equality for themselves than they ever have in history, and they should, and we need them to, because it's only when we have full equality and full acceptance for LGBTQ people that closets will no longer be needed, and closets will not exist. So we need them to do that, and we also need to do that too and say, hey, while we're talking about closets, we're missing a whole piece of it. We're missing a whole aspect of the damage and darkness that closets do, because we're not talking about what happens to the leftover straight wife, and we're not at all leftover, but what happens to, sometimes society thinks of us that way, thinks of us as the leftovers, you know, and that's what we have to speak out against. We're not leftovers. Society thinks of us as the leftovers sometimes. No, I'm not leftover. Let's make no mistake about it. None of us are leftovers. And so we need to not be treated like the leftovers. Like as our gay spouses come out of their closets and run into their new lives and embrace their new lives, then we're just looked at like the old coat that they shrugged off and left sitting at the pooled at the bottom of the closet door. And we're not anybody's old coat. We have dignity, and we have we're entire human beings over here who have stories to tell, and stories that matter. And so, and I would argue that in telling our stories to each other, and slowly as we feel comfortable telling our stories to people who are not in our community, and risking that people might not like what we have to say, is how we're going to ultimately empower ourselves to not be so victimized by our experiences. As we talk about it more, we're going to gain empowerment over our stories. We're going to gain empowerment over the trauma that happened to us. So I would encourage people to...
And I think
to,
that's really been displayed by all the women who are coming out today. When I look at the bravery that those gymnasts had and how they had to suffer for all those years because people were so afraid to say anything, so they kept it to themselves, and they suffered that, you know, trauma, that shame, that sexual abuse that will affect them for the rest of their lives. I'm not saying they have to live with, you know, as victims the rest of their lives, but trust me, it will affect them always when you go through those kinds of experiences. And we are going through not the same experience, but a different kind of experience of dehumanization, of being, you know, having lost our feminine spirit, of so many different, you know, emotional angles, not trusting ourselves, being told we're not good mothers, not good wives, anything but the truth. And the reality is, I do want to say that I work with a couple of hundred men every year who come to me for help in coming out to their wives. And, you know, only helping that they do the right thing. I mean, I always tell men I'm very proud that you're ready to do this, you know, that it's really important to give your wife the biggest gift of all, the gift of truth. But I will tell you this. They usually come to me, I would say 90% of them, because they've already met somebody and they're ready to go and they already have a relationship and they're already in love in their gay life. And this could be 25 years into the marriage. And they want my help to make it all better for them, for, you know, telling their wives. And I do help them however I can. But it's not for the right reasons, you know. And this is my whole thing. There has to be a sense of fair play somewhere. And I think the gay community needs to support us on this issue. I think those there are very many honorable gay people who have, you know, a good sense of value. But I don't see them really getting in our corner on this.
Well, and I think that that is, I want to say, yeah, I think there are some members of the gay community who have absolutely a right understanding of what this is and what is and is not an integrous behavior, and that this is not integrous behavior. And you will see these gay men speak about, hey, I will not date a married man, married to a woman. I will not date a closeted man. Those guys, we're like, hey, get together and have a cocktail and talk about how we can get you louder in your community. And I don't know the 100% the answer to that question is, how do we build those bridges with the gay community and those people in the gay community who understand that this is not an okay thing to do? And essentially, you know, it, in the broader cultural moment, we're all being asked to do this right now, right? Like, white people are being asked to check themselves and to look at where we might be blind by things, and men are being asked to look at where they might have certain kinds of privilege, right? And to sort of check each other and be like, hey, that's not okay to talk to a woman like that in the workplace, right? Well, that's the Me Too movement, right? And so as a broader cultural moment, we are in this place where people are being asked to step up to the plate and sort of, you know, help members of their own community be better fellow human beings to people who are not in their group. And so we need, it would be really, really great if and when we can get some LGBTQ people to be like, and some of them are already doing this, and we need more to have that real, actually a social consequence for somebody who is closeted and married to a woman, or closeted and married to a man or whatever, where it's like, you're married to a woman and you're at this gay bar right now trying to pick me up? That's not cool. I feel sorry for your wife. You know, some real social consequences where that kind of behavior is really looked down on. And then that man can't get a single date, you know? Like, that would be really, really great. And I think it's going to really what it's going to – we need more visibility. We need more visibility, and I know I'm working on some things in my own life to help advance that. Some things that Bonnie, that I've got going on in my own life to help raise that visibility. We need more visibility. We need people to know about us as a community of people who exist out here who have had this experience of marriage. And I think with that visibility, you know, it's kind of like with the Me Too movement, I was like, all of a sudden, everybody came out of the woodwork and said, oh my God, how many women have experienced Harvey Weinstein in this way? And it was only when all of these other women started stepping up and saying, yeah, I had that experience with Harvey Weinstein. And then another woman said, I had that exact same experience with Harvey Weinstein. And as we continue to hear more women coming forward and recite similar stories, we went, whoa, this is a thing. This is not just one or five or 10 or a handful of bitter women, you know, as we get characterized. This is actually a social phenomenon that's happening that needs to be examined, looked at, light needs to be shed on, and we need to be talking about this as an aspect of the closet. Because this is part of the closet. And to circle back around to Rick Clemens, this is, and I don't know him, and I don't know, I'm not familiar with his current podcast, et cetera, but I would just hope that as he goes forward and reaches people, that he begins to talk about the fact that the closet that a gay husband is in is not just his closet. His wife's in there with him. And she has a part to play in that too, and he's got to acknowledge that and honor that and be respectful of that and encourage people to take responsibility for the fact that they've basically conscripted somebody into a closet, maybe even against their choice and against their will. So, yeah, we've got a lot of work to do.
We do, Kristen, and you know, we're coming to the end of our broadcast, and I can't thank you enough for being here, because you're always so inspirational, and your words just make so much sense to our women who are listening to them, and so encouraging to them. And I hope you'll come back soon again, because people just feel so invigorated after listening to you. And I thank you so much, because in a dark world, I'm always looking for inspiration, and I count on you. Because you are my most inspiration for this whole movement. And all of your words to me are like words of pearls dropping out of your mouth. I just love to listen to you. I'll keep re-listening to this podcast so I can keep hearing you. But I thank you so much,
thank you.
And I hope you'll be back again. To all of our women, just keep standing up saying, we too. Don't be afraid to tell your story, and we'll be progressing on that coming up very soon. So to all of our listeners, love to all of you. Stand strong, stand up, be inspired by Kristen. Say, we too, and start writing down your stories because someday someone's going to want to hear it. So any other last moment thoughts, Kristen?
Thank you both to you, Bonnie, and to your listeners for providing this wonderful platform for us all to come together and hear each other's stories. So, and me too.
Thank you. All right. So
thanks,
good night,
Bonnie.
To everybody. And Kristen, I'll be talking to you soon again, hopefully. And take
great.
Care and have a great week. Right. Good night.
You too.
Bye-bye.